Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys. Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen every day from 11 to noon, reach through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm fine. How are you today?
I'm doing well. You know, there have been a couple of articles recently about how restaurants are changing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the articles by Kim Severson, who's been on this show many times, is entitled, "Is the Entree Heading for Extinction?" Now, this is something we see again and again. People are questioning the appetizer, entree, dessert formula of a restaurant. And from fine dining to tapas bars, mm-hmm. it's really being questioned. And I think it's good that people are looking at different ways to eat. I mean, Craft Bar, our friend Tom Colicchio, mm-hmm. has the Craft series of restaurants, was the first to sort of deconstruct it and just list different proteins and sauces mm-hmm. and sides that you could put together in any way you liked.
Well, but Kim mentions them, but one of the things that they still basically you're having a protein as the centerpiece of your meal, usually at Craft
yes.
Bar. Whereas I think that the idea of is the entree heading for extinction, which is the title of Kim's article, I think that more and more people are having 7-course meals where each course is a smaller course, or they're going to the tapas places. I think that's more to the point of what she's speaking.
Well, one of the things she mentions in her article is that younger people are much more comfortable doing that. And mm-hmm. she makes that a parallel between, young people who take the songs on their iPod and program them in whatever order they like, not they don't play an album through.
Right.
You know? And it's about people who want to have choices on each individual step. I think that it's great that people are dining in many different ways. I think it's also interesting that coming into fashion or into practice with this, the tasting menu or the tapas mm-hmm. menu or the small plates menu, whatever you want to call it, is also the idea of a sharing menu of a
right.
of a large plate menu, so of a steak for two, like mm-hmm. we have in our restaurant, or pasta, people sharing different courses or dishes for two.
But there are many restaurants as well not even offering entrees, period.
And I think that's fine, but I don't think the entree is headed for extinction. I think that, when we started in the business, when you went into a restaurant, it was the old, say it was 1980s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even the innovative restaurants at that time would have a main course, and on that main course you had a protein, a starch, and a vegetable.
Right.
And very often in many restaurants, the mark of a mediocre place, it was the same starch and vegetable, no matter what
right.
the protein was.
That's
like
right.
a chicken dish and a steak dish were all
right.
the same.
How many times can I have wild rice and carrots?
Or mashed potatoes and cauliflower puree. So I think that that's gone by the wayside, and I think that people are open to eating different ways. And I enjoy communal eating. I love it when I'm at a restaurant and there's something for two, I'm more likely to get it. You know, like Dover sole is a fish that's, fairly expensive here in America and usually large. And you can't really save half a Dover sole, so they'll make it for two.
Right. To mention something like a big steak or a big veal chop or a crown roast. Those types of things, well, they're better if they're served,
if they're cooked in
a large portion. There are some things that are simply better cooked in a large portion than they are cooked in a small portion.
You know, I'll give you an example of something that's frankly a little too large.
Mm-hmm.
The burger.
A turkey?
No, it's funny. The burger at Stage Left.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you. It's a little more burger than I like to eat in a sitting.
I concur.
But we have tried to change the size a little bit. And if you change the size one way or the other,
it changes how it cooks.
Texture and the flavor and mm-hmm. the toothsomeness of that burger. So for that burger to have that flavor profile, it has to be that size. And that's obviously not large enough for two, although you and I will often split a burger for lunch.
Very frequently.
And we're gluttons.
And probably should do it less frequently than we do.
Probably should. Although as I'm talking about it, I'm thinking of no water.
I gotta tell you, after the show. I'm totally not kidding at all. You started talking about the burger, and I started salivating.
I think I'll do that.
I'm not kidding one tiny little bit.
But I I like the sharing idea. I like being able to go out for tapas. I spent a lot of time in Spain when I was younger, and
one of my favorite restaurants in the country is a place in Washington D.C. In Washington D.C. It is a place called. You knocked it out of my head right now.
With the Alinea thing? Hold on a second. It's Cafe, not Cafe Haleo. Atlantico. Haleo, right.
It's Haleo, Jose Andres' restaurant. And it's just one of the... It's just tapas. That's all they offer. And it is a great, great restaurant where I love to go with 6, 8, 10 people and just have small plates of food being brought out to us and brought out to us and brought out to us for the same amount of time I would spend in a regular restaurant, the same amount of money I would spend in a regular restaurant, and the same amount of food that I would eat in a regular restaurant.
I will say that I remember we were there together.
We
were there together. The last time I was there, we were there together. And we were with our partner Lou and we were with our chef Anthony. Mm-hmm. We all sat at the table with our wives and girlfriends. I didn't have a girlfriend. It's always an odd number when you're out with me. Now I have a fiance. I can join the
You're even again.
So, we ordered, this was an extensive menu. We ordered everything on the menu. I don't know if you recall. And what was amazing about this place, Haleo, you should go to, there are two of them in Washington. We went to the one in Georgetown, I think. And, stunning. We must have ordered 70 plates of food and 70.
Maybe 50 plates of food.
Perfect plates, every single one of them. And yeah, I like to dine like that once in a while, but I still like to go out to have dinner and have a salad or a soup or a first course, then have a main course, and then have dessert. See, I think that that is a very normal way to eat, and then sometimes not have dessert. And it's some of that stuff, I don't want all of that stimulation.
Right. Well, it depends. And let's talk about stimulation. Let's talk about what I want when I go out to dinner. Sometimes I want a 12-course tasting menu with 12
Absolutely.
Different wines, and I want the sommelier to come to me between every course and tell me what I'm eating and what I'm drinking. And sometimes I want to go out with my friends and have a night out with my friends, and I want to have an appetizer, a shared entree, and a dessert, and I want to focus on what's happening at the table, and I want to eat a delicious meal, and I don't want the waiters to be telling me things or bringing me new things every 6 or 7 minutes.
Well, here's an interesting thing, because, you know, when you go out to a temple of gastronomy, you know, if you go to Il Bulli, you know, or if you go to, you know, a Michelin 3-star restaurant somewhere, you're going and the food is a huge part of what's going on, and it's a huge part of the percentage of the evening. Very often when I go out, I want to go to a place where the food is great,
right?
But the progression of the meal is about being in a beautiful place, having wonderful food and wine, and talking to the person that I'm with.
Yep.
And I don't want to work that hard sometimes.
Right.
And so I don't think the entree is headed for extinction. I think that it's probably taking its rightful place among the many options of dining, and I think that's how it should be. You know, but when you go to restaurants that offer you only a tasting menu, and it's only a 5-course tasting menu.
And that's more and more common.
And it's common for a lot of reasons that have to do with the restaurant business, and a lot of people like that, and I often like that, but I often also like the choice to have an appetizer, an entree, dessert, a cup of coffee.
I'm going to save that kind of restaurant for a specific kind of evening.
Anyway, but the restaurant world in America is great that we have all these options. I'm thrilled with all of them. I just like to keep a little bit of my stalwart as an option every once in a while. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Today, our guest is an old friend. Craig Shelton is celebrated as one of the nation's foremost chefs. He was on the cover of Gourmet magazine. He's one of New Jersey's favorite sons. His restaurant is the Ryland Inn, which is currently closed and undergoing some changes. And he also has a new venture called Chef's Coffee that you can find at chefscoffee.com.
Craig Shelton, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're doing well.
You're doing
fantastic.
Pretty darn well. Now, we should start off by telling people, anybody from New Jersey, of course, knows the Ryland Inn. But the Ryland Inn was around. How long have you had the Ryland Inn? Have you been the owner or chef of the Ryland Inn?
Since 1991.
So that's since 91, which was, I have to say that you really raised the bar single-handedly for New Jersey cuisine when the Ryland came to town. And you suffered some some misfortune that restaurateurs are likely to suffer. You had some unfortunate water damage now, and your restaurant is closed. Why don't you tell our listeners about what happened and why the Ryland's closed right now?
Well, you know, it's a series of two major sort of catastrophic events. It's a very old building, built in 1796. And in 2005, I was beginning a major comprehensive refit of the entire interior. And when we pierced the skin to do a little bit of electrical work, we discovered that the building was about to collapse. And
which is pretty bad for a restaurant.
Which is pretty bad. So we ended up having to partially or fully close it for almost 6 months of the 2005. And then, you know, we had to reinforce and replace so many of the beams and pillars with, you know, steel and micro lamps. And so we had, you know, suffered a great, great setback in cash flows and, you know, and overall business, during those times, partial closure and whatnot. We had, you know, picked up the ball, taken our lumps, and we, you know, rallied the team, and everybody was working, you know, vigilantly through 2006, and then right in the beginning of 2007, there was a water main break in the basement of the main building, which flooded 6 feet, taking out all of the electrical panels and many of the major utilities. And all of that had to be replaced, every wire, every box, so forth and so on. And we even had water coming through walls and ceilings at different points. It was almost like, you know, the proverbial Dutch boy who's got his thumb in one hole and another leak springs. And so it took almost 120 days just to finally start moving forward and rebuilding it all from the, you know, from the ground up.
Craig, I live on the Rahway River, and you don't really need to talk to me about the devastation of flooding. That's something that I have some firsthand experience in.
But, you know, it's funny. This is, and I wanted to talk with you about this, Craig, with our listeners, because, you know, the restaurant industry provides us with, I don't know, one of the last bastions of true mom and pops. I mean, your hardware store is closed, Home Depot did that. Your little grocery store is closed, Walmart did that. And restaurants are one of those businesses where people can own one or maybe two or three. But the plight of the small businessman, you know, even if you're well insured, a well-placed water main break can really do devastating years' worth of damage. And, you know, that's what we go to work with every day. Everybody in the restaurant business who owns a restaurant goes to work with every day.
You know, and some of the things I haven't heard spoken about when people are talking about the Ryland, yeah, you close for 4 months while you do the repairs, and maybe even the insurance does eventually pay that and does eventually solve the cash flow issues. But then you have, you know, some of your key employees have now been out of work for 3 months and had to go find something else, or all the myriad of other problems that come from not having your business flowing in the way you want it to flow, no pun intended, for a time period like that. Are those some of the things you've been experiencing?
Of course, the wonderful assumption in there is that the insurance will even cover everything.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's the case and sometimes it isn't. But as you point out correctly, there are just a host of issues that can't be quantified, you know. With such a special occasion place as the Ryland Inn, you know, we're booking our business 2 to 3 years in advance in any of the larger parties and functions and weddings and whatnot. And as far as the just even simply the special occasion personal dining for anniversaries and birthdays, you know, it could be you know, at least a year, sometimes 2 years in advance as well. So once you interrupt the you know, the pipeline, you know, that's one thing. As you guys know, I'm sure we would all agree that the number one asset you have in a business such as ours is your human capital.
Sure, mm-hmm. Of course.
So many of my employees have been with me from the very beginning of 1991, 17-year veterans, mm-hmm. Thousands of hours of one-on-one training between me and them.
It was the very first thing I thought of when people said you were gonna be down for close for a little while. Was how do you retain those people and how do you make sure that they have what they need so they can continue their lives as well?
Precisely. And so, you know, it's there are times of trial in life in which you can take it one of two ways, I believe. You can go into self-pity or you can embrace it as part of the mystery in life and it's an occasion where you tap into the spiritual side of things and you come out the other end having greatly benefited from it, I believe.
Well, when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk more with one of New Jersey's favorite sun chefs, Craig Shelton, about the Ryland Inn, about what's happening in the future. We've talked a little bit about the past, and we're going to talk about what's going on right now with a new venture he's involved in called chefscoffee.com, which you can find out more about in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, WCTC 1450. The time is 11:26.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light.
Vogue magazine calls Jackie Naylor the new voice of jazz. We call her family. Jackie has 6 critically acclaimed albums to her credit, including the brand new Smashed for the Holidays. From the Wall Street Journal to New York Magazine to the Village Voice, the praise is universal. The Restaurant Guys present Jackie Naylor in a Champagne New Year's Eve concert at the Crossroads Theater in New Brunswick. Champagne at intermission provided by the extraordinary Lenobe family of champagnes. Dine before or after the show at one of our restaurants right next door. The beautiful new Heldrich Hotel across the street has preferred room rates for our guests, so you don't even have to drive. Spend New Year's Eve with champagne, jazz, great food, and the Restaurant Guys. For tickets, menus, hotel rates, or more information, it's 732-828-4444 or restaurantguysradio.com. Spend New Year's Eve with us.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. We're talking with Craig Shelton, owner of the Ryland Inn and chefscoffee.com. Now, Craig, what's going on? We talked a little about the past in the last segment. What's going on in the future? What's happening with the Ryland?
Well, it's better than my wildest dreams. I have done an exhaustive search. I had many opportunities to go in different paths, but I found partners. Two couples, one lives overseas, the other couple lives here in New Jersey, and we are coming together to take the Ryland Inn and fulfill, you know, all of the dreams there. We're going to be building an extraordinary small boutique hotel in the Relais Chateau Manor. We're going to be reopening the restaurant very soon and take that to the next level. There are going to be just phenomenal other activities on there, the bakery, the organic farming, the cooking school coming down the pipeline, retail boutiques, perhaps a farmer's market. I am just vibrating with joy over the future.
And, you know, there's a reason you listen to the Restaurant Guys radio show is to hear stuff like that. That's darned exciting.
That's great news, Craig.
That's really awesome.
It's been a long and winding road, you know.
That's big news.
Off probably a little more than I could chew in you know, becoming the sole owner of that property. It's massive responsibility of stewardship, and it doesn't take too many knocks. 9/11 and so forth, the pharmaceuticals for it to be a little tense at times. But, life is beautiful, and somehow or other it all just works out if you keep the faith.
We're going to keep on that track in just a moment. We'll come back after the news and talk more with one of New Jersey's favorite sons, Craig Shelton. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with The Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody. everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cat and Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
We're talking today with Craig Shelton. Craig Shelton is one of the best chefs in America. He is certainly one of the best chefs in New Jersey and maybe the first chef to really raise the bar to the level where it is today in New Jersey. We were talking before the news, and Craig let us all know, we announced right here on the Restaurant Guys, that the Ryland Inn will be opening, and we're looking for a Relais and Chateau hotel and a cooking school, and we're going to really make it everything that you've ever wanted it to be. So when you get, as you go along with that, will you keep us appraised and come back on the Restaurant Guys and tell our listeners how the project's going?
Well, I'll come back as often as you'll have me. I love this show.
Excellent. Well, and you're my new best friend. Let's talk about what you're doing right now, though. One of the reasons that prompted us to call you and say, hey, come on the show, is you have a new venture having to do with coffee. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, it's a new public face of something that I began 21 years ago when I was the chef de cuisine at Boulay. And it occurred to me that most restaurants were serving pretty darn awful coffee simply because the system works that if you buy this institutional coffee, they give you the equipment for free. And it's still to this day so pervasive everywhere you turn. And I thought to myself, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to have clients who are coming maybe once in their lifetime or once a year for a truly special occasion to end it on such a, you know, a disastrous note.
Right. You spent $2 million on your restaurant. You might want to spend $1,500 on a coffee maker.
It doesn't, you know, isn't it ironic? And you know, nothing. No, you know, it's that last note that people can so profoundly remember too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that I've always had a slightly different approach in cooking. By virtue of my own prior experience, you know, I'm a French citizen as well as an American citizen, so I have always had an enormous respect for the whole culinary tradition. I've not always felt that new is necessarily better, and I think sometimes it takes many, many years to understand the profound value of what has come before. But by the same token, a couple of us, you know, of that era, Robert Del Grande, and I were probably the two chefs who had a very, very intensive scientific background. I took degrees in molecular biophysics and biochemistry from Yale. And my particular focus was on neurobiology and the study of the senses. So, you know, they were very kind in letting me to do some stuff with the medical school. And I was trying to get after, you know, what's going on with our sense of sight, sense of smell, sense of touch, and so forth, senses of taste. And I found out a lot of things that seemed to fly in the face of what the popular culture was saying. Such things as, taste is all relative and whatnot, And this led me into thinking deeply about not merely, you know, food and wine pairing as one thing. We inherited, largely from the French, a whole body of knowledge which was trial and error, experiential, of what wines work with what foods. I mean, we think of classics like Vouvray, a dry Vouvray with raw oysters, for example.
Sure, they've spent generations and generations developing those things.
But it's trial and error, and you're thinking more theoretically how to come at it.
Well, that's been one of the largest bodies of my work, has been to try to get to what is going on from a scientific point of view, and therefore to be able to predict. Because, you know, the difference was when we, you know, the three of us all started in this career, you know, 25, 35 years ago, you go into almost any high-end restaurant and you'd see the same essential dishes. So if you ordered a Dover sole Veronique, you knew what the elements were. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had a subtle difference from one chef to the next, but you had a predictable dish, more or less, and therefore choosing a wine, you know, was pretty simple. Did you memorize yet, you know, these classic pairings? Now, in today's world, a Dover Sole Veronique could mean anything. You know, it could be a foam of grapes with a tempura of this, and you know, I think that to some degree, even the sommeliers in a restaurant itself are left with a vertigo of, you know, looking into the chasm of where on earth do we begin?
There's a chance that your Dover Sole dish doesn't even contain Dover Sole.
Right. It's just a wordplay dish, you know? Right.
Exactly.
Or it's been turned into a foam. What do you do then? So how does your approach sort of try to make sense of this?
Well, the first thing that we were taught in medical school, you know, over there in New Haven was that none of our senses measures anything on an absolute scale. The tongue does not say that this glass of wine has a pH of 7 or 8 or 2. All of our senses merely say this is more acidic or less acidic than what I just tasted beforehand. This is louder or this is softer than what I just heard before.
So
this is rougher or this is softer than I just touched before.
So what people who match wine and food know well and match food know well is that everything recalibrates everything.
This is the truth. And everything changes everything else. In other words, and we've seen this time and again, we know that if we're just drinking plain old tap water or even better, distilled water, and we go along and all of a sudden it just tastes like water once we're all calibrated to that. However, then the next step is we bite into a lemon, put that lemon juice around in our mouth, and go back and taste that very same glass of water. It's as if someone just put a tablespoon of sugar in it. If you'll, you know, permit me, the idea is that the wine has changed. Now, what practical value does this have to the public? Well, I can tell you that I've heard this comment 1,000 times in over the last 2 decades from clients of mine who said, you know, Craig, we were at another restaurant recently, and we ordered a very expensive bottle of wine, and when we opened it, it was delicious, and then it went bad during the meal.
Eating my artichoke, it went bad, strangely.
Right. You guys know full well that's impossible. A wine is bad or it's good from the beginning and remains so. But the trouble is that we as a culture have wanted to ignore and sort of assert the idea that anything goes. If you like it, it goes. And you know, as far as the notion that rules are for the, you know, the guidance of wise men and the observance of fools, I'm in full agreement. However, you know, countless people have devoted their lives and their life work to come up and, you know, and elucidate some of the truth in this matter of gastronomy, in this matter of combining food and wine, and you and I, all three of us, have had those moments many a time where a wine, we might consider it a 3 on a scale of 1 to 10, and a dish that maybe is a 4 on a scale of 1 to 10, but when put together, it was a 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was ethereal, it was otherworldly. And conversely, we've also had occasions where we had a wine which was a 100, you know, maybe a 45 Richebourg, for example. And with the wrong food, it suddenly became a disaster.
You know, one of the things that's funny that you alluded to earlier, Craig, or that you stated earlier, is that because you don't know what the dishes are, you know, it used to be if you knew the rules, you could go by rote and come up with something pretty good. Since you don't know what exactly is going to be in your dish, I posit that people who do what you do and people who do what we do, chefs and sommeliers who work together to pair wine and food, who know the wines in their cellar and who know the food as it's coming out of the kitchen, are more valuable than ever before.
I couldn't agree more. And having a working theory that can help predict, because after all, how many $300 bottles do you want to open searching after that correct, you know, pairing.
Yeah, trial and error is not the best way. If it's someone else's $300, I don't mind so much. Hey, we have to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more with Craig Shelton of ChefsCoffee.com and of the Ryland Inn in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:45.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurant. We're having a fascinating conversation with Craig Shelton. He owns the Ryland Inn here in New Jersey, which is temporarily closed and will soon be opened in even greater glory than it was before. And his current company is ChefsCoffee.com. Craig, before the break, we were talking about wine and food pairings and why things work together and there are actual physical properties that make things interact with our senses in ways that are maybe counterintuitive sometimes. Now, you've applied these principles that you've gleaned mostly with wine and food pairings in restaurants to your coffee company. Tell us about why Chef's Coffee is different and why the coffee that you produce is different.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, we have this way of looking at wine in America. Everything seems to be spoken about wine as how it performs in a blind tasting, devoid of the food element.
I hate that.
Devoid of the setting. And
also with one on top of another, on top of another, on top of another, where you're tasting maybe 200 or 300 wines in a day.
And, you know, and the point score of a wine may have, it has no value of telling you whether or not this is going to be an extraordinary wine with food. Well, it's that same approach I wanted to take with coffees. Number one, from the very beginning, 20 years ago, I said, I don't care what it costs. Cost is no factor. Find me the finest beans, and I don't care how rare there are. If there's only 100 pounds of them on tire, it doesn't matter. We went through an exhaustive search. I went through like several hundred different assays of every important coffee bean on earth. The second thing was not one of them was the complete experience the way, you know, a perfect Chateau Guicamp or a perfect Latour is. Every one of them had a flaw. It had all the richness in body, but it didn't have enough acidity to keep interest, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The end result was I found that we got the most superior result, number one, in a layering approach. So what we do completely different from anyone else was we found 4, 5, or 6 different coffees. Each was designed to deliver a certain element in the taste experience. Then each one was roasted to a slightly different level, whereas if I was going to serve, hypothetically, a Kenya AA all by itself, the optimal temperature might be X. But in this blend, it might be X plus 1 degree or plus 2 degrees in its roasting temperature as part of the blend.
Sure, because you're looking for certain qualities in it that may not be the qualities by itself that would be the ones we'd enjoy the most.
The next step was, what is the environment? Since this coffee was designed, my first blend, the Shelton blend, which is now called the Ryland Inn blend, was designed for the setting of a very, very elegant restaurant where most of the food is rather subtle so that it will work with very, very, expensive, noble wines. The delivery of that coffee, the end user is going to be in a very elegant and refined environment, so it dictated to me a very refined and elegant and complex and nuanced layer after layer of aroma, layer after layer of flavor. Now, in keeping with that thinking, that's not the only place I drink coffee, nor anybody else. You know, I was out there on my sailboat one day out in the ocean on the way to Newport, and I discovered my coffee didn't taste right. It's the same damn coffee. What's going on? And I, aha, I said, here we have the marine environment, the briny air. It's changing the flavor of the coffee that I perceive because of all of that iodine and, you know, all of that marine air. So we had to make a new blend that directly took into account that. Then we did the same thing, the equestrian blend, for outdoorsy type stuff where there's a lot of, you know, more acerbic, more assertive aromas.
I understand that one has some horse manure aromas too.
No, it goes well in the presence of horse manure.
But that blend, the equestrian, is more designed for picnic, barbecue type food, or more of the yin yang, you know, we might call American style of food today. And finally, you know, we're dealing with something which is extremely difficult, which is how to get a good cup of coffee up in an airplane. You know, so because even though you may have a pressurized cabin, you still don't have complete pressure, like on land. So the water's boiling at a lower temperature, and as you know, the temperature at which coffee is brewed is perhaps the single most
paramount
important factor in it coming out correctly. So we've, you know, working with all sorts of different levels of acidity and richness from coffees around the world. So ultimately, this was, I think, the only coffee company that ever said, damn the cost, we don't care. We don't care what it is. It simply has to be the best. Damn the cost, we don't care on the techniques for roasting, the equipment costs, et cetera, et cetera. All the fair trade practices, we've been doing that for 20 years. We've been focusing on that and, you know, ecology, and as you guys have pointed out so brilliantly, they are one and the same. Good business and good ecology.
Absolutely.
And good ethics.
Amen.
They all support each other.
Amen. Well, so we only have about 30 seconds left, but what's the difference between what does the aviation blend do differently to make up for being up in the air?
Well, what we found was that, number one, the senses are more dulled. It's almost like you have a cold.
No question about it.
So you need punching through acidity. So we're going to be using more of the, you know, coffees from the regions that give you acidity. You know, we're not, you know, the Indonesian coffees, the Javas, the Sumatras, the Celebes, the New Guineas, all of those coffees are low in acid. But some of the African coffees, they have more of spice and fruit, much more acidity. You know, you're looking at your Kenyas, your Ethiopians, the Tanzanians, and so forth like that. So we're going to be emphasizing those types. We also are looking at what the difference in grind size does.
You know, Craig, we're going to have to leave it there for just a moment, but we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:55. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We're having an intense conversation, and frankly, Craig, in all the years I've known you, I've never had anything but intense conversations with Craig Shelton. I don't know that he does any other kind. Craig, we were talking about one thing, and we only have a couple of minutes here in this last segment of the show, but we were talking about how you have at chefscoffee.com, and people can go to therestaurantguysradio.com. We'll link you to chefscoffee.com, and you can get a whole bunch of tips for brewing coffee and get your hands on some of these great blends. But the aviation blend, are you making that for airlines?
We're talking with some people, certain companies that are very interested in the concept, because you don't get much on a flight, and if the coffee sucks, I mean, what else is there?
Sure, exactly. My turkey and cheese has not gotten it. There's
especially if you're flying in steerage, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
There's one ingredient that we haven't talked about with coffee that I know you feel very strongly about, and we don't have a lot of time, but we have to talk about water. We have to talk about the water in the coffee because it's most of what's in the cup.
You got 50 seconds, Craig. Talk to us about water.
Well, I'm going to flip it on you. We regularly pay $1, $1.50 for a plastic bottle of water. Here is the good news. The finest coffees on earth, something Bill Gates can't even buy anything better, it costs you no more than 50 cents a cup.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest wines could be several hundred, even $1,000 a glass. The finest And making coffee is every bit as complex a process, every bit as much handwork. Obviously, it's no better than the quality of the water you put into the pot to start with. But you, anyone can afford to have the ethereal, otherworldly experience of the best there is on Earth for 50 cents a cup.
And sure, on that note...
We spent $5 at Starbucks right now.
On that note, we have to leave it there. Craig, it's been super having you. I hope you all out have enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Chai.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 12 noon.